present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We'll start with a front page headline from the Belper News, read by Carolyn Brown.
Council to make rubbish decision.
Let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Armando Iannucci and Linda Smith. And opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Sandy Toksvig. Armando, what a resting debate divided the House.
We're under threat. We're all under threat. Various terrorist acts have been committed on our shores that we don't know about yet. But we need to rush through legislation that if the perpetrators of those acts that have been committed that we don't know about yet only knew how tough the legislation was, it would deter them from having not had carried out the acts that haven't happened yet.
2 points.
And Charles Clark wants to put through anti-terrorist legislation, which will give him the power to put us all under house arrest. There was a rebellion by 30 MPs who were placed under house arrest.
I actually shouldn't mind a bit of... You get to an age where you wouldn't mind a bit of house arrest. I don't think I should be allowed out. If I go out, I get clamped or towed or people shout at me and I get the wrong change. And I'd like one of those tags on my ankle because I tend to forget why I've gone out. Can you volunteer for house arrest?
You won't have to, I think, Alan. The whole of Britain is going to be basically a gated community.
I don't understand this. If you arrive as your potential terrorist, what if you don't have a house? Do you think that if you're under house arrest, your house insurance would go down because you're home all the time?
Prevention of Terrorism Bill, containing provision for indefinite house arrest without trial, has passed its second reading in the Commons. Critics say the new Home Secretary Charles Clark has proved the unthinkable to be true. It is possible to be even more right-wing than David Blunkett. Linda, who isn't shy and retiring about wooing the retired?
Well, this is Michael Howard. He's trying to woo the elderly. Try and get them to support the Tories by giving them a cut in their council tax. Normally, Michael Howard tends to be very popular with the post-pensioners. The, what you might call, dead.
Linda, you're upsetting Alan.
No.
Because you're referring to them as old.
No, she said elderly. I mean,
elderly.
I've been middle-aged for 48 years.
We have to be elderly, don't you, to get a pension?
No, you have to be 65.
You're going to get £342 off your council tax if you're over 65, whatever your income. And I was thinking that, so we'd have to be handy for the Queen.
Well, actually, you're slightly wrong there, Sandy, because there's a little clause in it that says there will be a ceiling for this to avoid the very rich benefiting disproportionately, because there's nothing the Tories hate more than that.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you think you'd get a council... I mean, I would like to conflate these two questions because I'm having such a good time. Do you think you'd get a council benefit cut if you're under house arrest?
This is my worst nightmare come true because I feel as if I'm in an episode of Money Box Live.
This week, Michael Howard unveiled plans to cut council tax for 5 million pensioners. Mr. Howard said that pensioners deserve to be treated with dignity. Many of them had fought for the freedoms we enjoy today. House arrest, student loans, illegal wars. Also this week, the Commons Register of Members' Interests revealed that William Hague earns in excess of £1 million a year. He charges between £5,000 and £10,000 a time for after-dinner speaking, though a cup of cocoa will put you to sleep for a fraction of that price. Sandy, who don't need no education reforms?
This is this woman who seems to have time to be Minister for Education and sail around Britain at the same time. extraordinary resemblance, I think, Ruth Kelly to Ellen MacArthur, do you not think? You sort of think that she should have stood at the dispatch box and gone, I can't do reforms, I just can't. I've really tried, not like that. I can't do it. There was a long and serious report done by Mike Tomlinson, who spent his whole life in education, knows a great deal about it, and they spent an enormous amount of money getting him to do this research, and then they decided that was a really bad idea. And generally, we're not going to do anything.
That seems to be the gist of it. A-levels are going to be tougher, so much tougher, we're going to spell them with two letters instead of one. And for people who can't spell GCSE, there's going to be the letter 5.
Education Secretary Ruth Kelly has rejected the proposals of the Tomlinson Committee, opting instead to solve the problems of academic and vocational divisions in education by doing nothing at all about them. Ms. Kelly said she wanted to build on what is good and replace what was not working. So we can expect a new Education Secretary any day now. Alan, listen to this. It's your pink Alan, why is the big day proving a bigger headache?
Many years ago, when I lied about my age and joined up to fight in the news quiz, if someone had asked me whether one day there'd be a question about the future King of England marrying in an underwater chapel off the Galapagos in a voodoo rite with a wrung chicken's neck, I would have said you're having a laugh. It is this immense cock-up by Sir Michael Peat, who last investigated the royal procedures when he found Charles was flogging all his wedding presents, so anybody coming to the ceremony April the 8th would be wise not to give him anything. With market value, because there'll be an Aston Martin boot sale and he will find his fish forks back on the open market. They can't get married in a church because the church objects, but they can't get married in a civil ceremony because the 1836 Marriage Act, amended to the 1949 Marriage Act, says that a royal person can't do it. However, we are all invited. 60 million people can turn up on the day to raise a hand if they have any objection. It's going to be extremely noisy. and it's about King and the Queen of Cornwall. Who may get married sometime on April the 8th if they can find a railway car with a complacent rabbi.
I like the fact that it's been a subject of legal debate whether it's legal to marry Camilla Parker Bowles. Don't you think they should, you know, given that they can't have Windsor Castle or anywhere like that, don't you think they should go the whole hog, get off to Las Vegas... In, you know...
The Elvis Chapel.
Exactly. King, meet the king. And just... Elvis impersonated, thank you very much. Here's your complimentary chips for the casino. Just, in fact, they might get more of the family to attend. Like.
Good God, no. Edward's not going anywhere for a free twiglet, but Edward is not... Nobody is going.
The Queen sat at home filling, you know, filling vol-au-vent cases with condensed mushroom soup and...
I know, I had the official explanation. She said she's not going to the wedding, but she's going to the reception afterwards, and the reason is that she Dick and Dorman de Bungalow is on Saturday, and she's a big fan. So she's
apparently... You can see her point of view. She, you know, I can imagine her saying, Charles... I've been to a few of you kids' weddings. They never turn out well.
Do you think maybe she's beginning to think of herself as the common factor?
You don't want me, I'm a jinx.
The events of the last week or so have been like watching a very, very slow car crash.
The Queen has decided not to attend Charles and Camilla's civil marriage ceremony. The Prince is due to marry Mrs. Parker Bowles at a civil ceremony. It's been called that because now Prince Philip won't be attending. At the end of round one, the scores are everybody level 4 points. We start round two with the news release.
The Cemetery of the Year Awards 2005 is relaunching its search for Britain's best burial ground, and stiff competition is guaranteed.
Thanks to Steve Beach for spotting that. Armando, what colourful sauce isn't good for the goose, the gander, or anyone at all?
We are a nation under threat. I think I said this before. What the terrorists have done now is they've injected... infected chili powder into Worcester sauce and fed it to mice.
Yeah. What next?
And soon 50-foot-high rodents immune to chili powder and Worcester sauce will be plaguing this country unless we place them under house arrest. And also all our food is being withdrawn. That's the other thing. I don't think, any of the medical experts have looked into the health implications of having no food to buy anyway. A little bit problematic if you want to stay alive, but that's it. Sudan won. Sudan won, us nil.
Who is the Sudan one?
The thing I liked about it was that the whole thing's been dealt with quite sort of awkwardly by the Food Standards Agency, which was created in 2000 to calm the public after BSE. And I feel on the whole that's not been a huge success.
The discovery of a batch of Worcester sauce contaminated with the potentially toxic dye Sudan 1 has led to the largest food product recall since the BSE scare. The discovery of the dye in processed convenience food has led to the immediate recall of meat pies, pot noodles, microwave meals and John Prescott. Linda, why will we ourselves be paying a penalty?
We ourselves?
It's Sinn Féin.
It is
Sinn Féin,
yes.
We are under attack.
Yes.
We are under attack by underemployed IRA chappies who have been doing bank robberies, most notably that Northern Bank one, mm-hmm. where they got that 26 million or whatever, which apparently they knew was the IRA because it carried all the hallmarks of the IRA, notably balaclavas and guns. So that narrowed it down a bit. You can see they're thinking, we've had a ceasefire, we've got these balaclavas, they're hardly worn. We've not got the wear out of them. You know, what would you do? And obviously, they don't feel the benefit because they're wearing them indoors. But so they've done that. They've got that money. And now they're trying to buy a bank in Bulgaria in order to launder the money. But they're saying, the Sinn Féin is saying they're not involved. But then the Southern Irish Justice Minister says, yes, they are, because actually they really are the IRA. And now the British government are going to stop their allowances that they get for not coming to Westminster, but even though they haven't been convicted of this crime. And I think Colin Farrell is interested in the part of Gerry Adams.
Well, I heard from a friend of mine who was in Ireland, she says the story that's going around is that the bank robbers thought there was only about a million in the bank. And the guy who they had at gunpoint to go and get the money for them, the bank official kept going, no wait, I know there's a bit more. And they had to go and get a second van. I don't know if it's true, but I quite like it.
Sinn Féin currently going through a torrid time after being threatened with sanctions after the Northern Bank robbery and having several senior party members outed by the Irish Justice Minister as members of the IRA's Army Council. Last weekend, police in the Republic seized more than £2.3 million, believed to be the biggest case of money laundering since Bill Gates left his wallet in the back pocket of his jeans. Sandy, listen to this. An American in Paris by George Gershwin. Do you need a question, Sandy?
Let's see. yes, this is very nice. George W., who's our very, very big friend who we stand shoulder to shoulder with, has decided to come over and make friends with everybody. Apparently we're all tremendous friends now. And what I liked a lot was this week Mrs. Bush, who's more of a sapling, really, than a complete bush. She decided that she would thank all the German people for how kind they'd been to all the American forces, and she did this in an American Air Force hangar with so much security around it that none of the German people were able to attend.
Mrs. Schroeder was a bit tasty, did you not think? She's a little corker.
Is she? I miss that.
I tend to have this grasp of European politics. I always look at the women.
Leaders' wives.
What? Leaders'
wives. That was rather sweet, scene with Bush and Putin.
Yes, Putin.
Putin.
And they met in Slovakia. I think this whole trip has been designed to just slowly confuse Bush. Because he's probably spent about a year trying to remember that Putin is head of Russia and then just got it all blown out of his system by meeting him in Slovakia.
I think you're underestimating the man, because he did say on this tour, Iran is not Iraq. So some of that stuff they're throwing at him, he's sticking.
Yeah.
George Bush has been visiting Europe. He's been looking forward to the trip for ages, as he's always wanted to go to Ayers Rock. Alan, why is the Navy in the pink this week?
Oh, right. This is walking on eggshells, isn't it, Sand?
You ought to
help me out
here.
It's the fact that in a great thrust forward, and indeed sideways, the Navy is going to allow its gay ratings to live together and share quarters on ships.
They will look good in the uniform, that's the thing. They will look very smart in the uniforms, and I think some of those battleships, that grey is not working. We could have a look at that, a bit of interior decor. I quite like the idea of the battleship turning up in pink going, "We're here! Hey!" That'd be great.
It'd be great when they get to New York, because they can do that fantastic dance with the buckets.
Yeah, see?
I think there's going to be a naval schism, like in the Anglican Church, and there'll be a non-gay navy. I think if you look at the Bible, the first navy in the Bible was Noah's Ark.
I may have mentioned this before, but it's a staggering fact that there are an enormous proportion of American people who think that Joan of Arc was Noah's wife.
Five years after the ban on homosexuality in the armed forces was lifted, the Royal Navy is joining campaign group Stonewall in a drive for gay recruits. The Navy's attempt to boost gay recruitment by advertising in so-called pink periodicals got off to a bad start when they wound up with a full-page spread of the Financial Times. At the end of round two, everybody's still level on 8 points.
Oh, well, there we are.
And before we start the final round, the long-awaited final round, here's a Grampian TV announcement about a change to their scheduled programmes.
Beyond Explanation will be replaced by Charles and Camilla ITN News Special.
Thanks to Michael Black of Aberdeenshire for that. Amanda, who's been given a cross to bear?
A cross. Cruise.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be David Beckham, who's just given birth to a little boy with a Spanish girl's name, Cruz.
Yes. What I didn't understand was David Beckham, he's got a few quid, hasn't he? All the pictures of him turning up for the baby, flowers from a petrol station.
It's going to make a wonderful legal firm when they grow up, isn't it? Brooklyn, Romeo and Cruz. You can just see... You'd really want solicitors called that. Yeah. International, fast, clever.
Yeah. Actually, Cruth, that would work for a boxer's baby, wouldn't it? Because they've always got lisps, boxers. Mm. I think that's why they're so aggressive.
They've had their teeth knocked out.
God, I've been puzzling over that for years. Why do boxers have lisps? No teeth. I just thought it was coincidence. Should have gone for the vocational degree after.
Victoria and David Beckham celebrated the birth of their third son this week. They've called him Cruz, after their favourite actor, Tom Baker. Listen to this. Linda, whose new home will be a chip off the old block?
Well, there's this house. It's in Lodge Moor, I believe, in Sheffield. I know that. I know Sheffield. I used to live there. And now it's a strange place to have something futuristic, really, because it's mainly a pie-based culture. Actually, there's a marvellous product called Henderson's Relish that comes from there. I hope that's not contaminated with Sudan 1. It's like a bootleg version of Worcester sauce.
Tribute sauce.
Yeah, it's a tribute sauce. But anyway, amongst all this, there's this sort of really high-tech house that they've made, and a family are going to go in there. They're going to be under house arrest, in a way. With these electronic tags on them. Pretty, but I don't know why they didn't call Alan. You'd have loved it. You'd have been in hog heaven. Because they just have to live in this house and the chips monitor sort of how long they're in the bathroom or how much they use the computer. And as there are two teenage girls involved in this, I would have hazarded a guess, actually, without the use of electronic devices.
And it has plasma screen. It's got lots of futuristic pieces of equipment.
Yeah. I don't like the sound. I don't like that name, plasma screen.
Why?
Well, it just sounds like there'll be all sort of close-ups of your blood on it. It just, it's nasty, a bit medical.
There is a digital channel that broadcasts just that.
Plasma.
Plasma,
If the Beckhams ever have a daughter, they've got a name there. It's the Parnell family of Sheffield who've been chosen to move into the house of the future. The house will monitor their every movement using electronic tags and 24-hour surveillance. For all those who fear that houses in the future could be changed beyond recognition from what we know now, there's no need to worry. Whatever happens else will be impossible to afford. Sandy, how has man's best friend got even closer?
Oh, this is this strange thing that Jerry Halliwell is like her dog, isn't it? And, well, yeah. I don't know if the dog's ever had a single out, but they did research and people were asked to kind of test the personalities of their dogs and say, you know, is it cheerful or is he depressed or is he very, very good at maths or Latin or does he keep his room tidy? And then they tested the dogs according to how the owners said that that was their personality traits. And indeed, it turned out to be true. In fact, there's been loads of sort of animal things. There was this thing this week about birds. Japanese crows have learnt to crack their nuts on traffic lights. Now, you would think that that means flying very low, but no, it's... they wait for a red light, and then they put their walnuts on the ground, and then they fly back up onto the traffic light, and the cars go past, crack the nuts, and then they wait for another red light, they go down, and they pick up the walnuts.
It sounded like the crow was the cleverest bird.
Yeah.
Carried out research by a crow at Lancaster University. And the emu, not surprisingly, was the dumbest.
Yeah.
It couldn't even build a bloody wing. I mean, it sat there thinking, I'm a bird. There's got to be a way of getting up in the air. And it's taken 400 million years and it hasn't come up with it
not
yet.
Too. I mean,
it
looks
I bet pigeons must wind them up. You think, you've got them, you don't even use them! That's why emus are so aggressive,
yeah.
I suppose, isn't
so
it?
So angry.
Have you ever been harassed by an emu?
I have, actually. I used to make a children's television programme called Number 73, and every week we had an animal in the studio. It was live, right? And we had the most fantastically aggressive emu. But my worst encounter, we had an elephant and a mouse in the studio. And the idea was to show how very nice they were together. And everything was very, very calm. And the vet was holding the mouse and he was standing next to the elephant. And I said, you know, is there any possibility that the elephant will do anything to the mouse? He said, oh, no, no, elephants are vegetarian. Well, apparently not this one. Live, on air, in front of many children... The elephant picks up the white mouse with his trunk and puts it in his mouth, and the vet's scrambling in the elephant's mouth, going, they're just playing.
He must have been one of those vegetarians, you know, like that people who say they're vegetarian, but they're, oh, I have fish.
Yeah. Yeah.
I eat white meat. Yeah.
New research published this week by a Dr. Gosling of the University of Texas suggests dogs share four of the five main personality traits that psychologists use to understand human behaviour. Dr. Gosling planned to present his findings last week, but unfortunately one of his scientists ate the homework. Alan, why does all work and no play make the over-60s rather happy?
Oh, yeah. It's Noel Coward saying work is more fun than fun. I mean, they rather like carry-on working because it's surprisingly more interesting than shuffleboard or molesting pelicans in the zoo. No, people like carrying on working. This is very good news for the government, who spent all their money, Brown having taken their pension money away, and people are very happy rather than, as I say, play crown balls or whatever, just to carry on working and working and working.
Yep.
And they do it in DIY superstores on a busy Saturday. And you say, do you know where the screws are? And they say, I'll show you. And you say, I haven't the time. Just point. And then they point, and they've got such arthritic hands, you don't know if it was left or right.
And then they'll say, I could tell you a story about screws. Yeah. I could tell you, because in the war you couldn't get them.
Last Tuesday I was in the screw aisle. I tell a lie, it was Monday.
A survey by the Employers Forum on Age found that 93% of over-60s enjoy their work, while 30-somethings are more likely to be disillusioned. The report suggests the reason that over-60s love their job so much is because they have so much less to do with their families. As once again Her Majesty the Queen proved this week. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Armando.
Well, this is from The Independent. The Pentagon considered building a gay bomb to make enemy soldiers, quote, sexually irresistible to each other, according to government papers from 1994. The plan envisaged an aphrodisiac chemical that would cause a non-lethal blow to morale. The idea was not pursued.
Yes, this was sent in by A. Knight in Taunton, and it's from the Daily Express. Frankfurt, an elderly Swiss woman withdrew her life savings of £80,000 in cash and then put it through the shredder to stop her daughter inheriting it. The woman said she did it because her daughter had neglected her in her old age and did not deserve the money. So the pensioner destroyed the banknotes, then gave the shredded strips to her daughter, who lives in Frankfurt in a bin bag.
This was sent in actually by quite a few people. It's from the Evening Standard. A severed human ear has been found in a city street, baffled police said today. No one has been admitted to hospital with a matching injury after the find on a pavement in Manchester, and no other body parts were found in a search of the surrounding area near Strangeways Prison. Police said an item had been sent for forensic tests. They are wary because a finger found some years ago was in fact a sausage.
From Daily Telegraph, Simon. J.L. Hunter Rountree, who has died in Springfield Jail, Missouri, at 92, was America's oldest prisoner. He was serving a 12-year sentence for robbing the first American bank at Abilene, Texas, last August. He managed to steal $1,900 and shuffled out of the bank, but was apprehended half an hour later, sleeping at the wheel of his Buick. When caught, he had forgotten why he wanted to rob the bank.
Now let's look at the final score. Alan and Sandy have 15 points, but this week's winners are Amanda and Linda with 17. Before we leave you, here's a quote from Christy Berg.
There were about 70 members of the cast and crew in the studio when I was singing, and by the time I'd finished, most of them were in tears.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Armando Iannucci, Linda Smith, Sandy Toksvig and Alan Corrin. The chairman was Simon Hoggett and the news was read by me, Carolyn Brown. The chairman's script was written by George Pohl, Simon Littlefield, Lucy Clark, Paul Carenza and Roger Crooks. And the producer was Katie Tyrrell.